Jim and Edith were part of our church family in a congregation Heidi and I worked with, well, several years ago now. And although there was a pretty big age difference between us, we were young with little kids just starting out, and Jim and Edith were retired. In spite of that, we really got to be good friends with them anyway. And I remember one evening having dinner at their house, and we were still kind of trying to get to know each other at that point. So I asked them, how did you come to be part of this church? How did you end up here? And they said, well, that's an interesting story. I said, we actually visited here years ago. And I said, the first time we came, we found the church to be rather cold and unfriendly. We just walked in the door and people, well, it was like we weren't there. Nobody spoke to us. Nobody greeted us. And frankly, it was a little uncomfortable. So they said, we went home that afternoon and we talked about it. And we decided there is something for us to do in this church. And so they placed membership. And on their first Sunday as members, they got there 30 minutes early. They drove a big white Cadillac. You always knew when Jim and Edith were there. And they placed themselves right out in the lobby and waited. And everybody that came in the door shook Jim and Edith's hand and got a big smile from this couple. And at first they said, we were the only ones that did it. And it went on that way for a while. But then others started to notice that they were there early greeting visitors. And they thought, that's a good idea. And so another couple joined them, and then another. And after a while, there were just a whole bunch of people back there before services greeting the visitors. And when Heidi and I came there years later, we found the church to be very warm and friendly. I mean, you had to run the gauntlet to get in the church building. All these people back there wanting to say hello. I think even more than their work, I really came to appreciate their spirit. Brothers and sisters, it is very easy to complain about things that could be better. It is harder to step up and make a difference. And that's what Jim and Edith did. And that's why I wanted to share their story with you, so that like me, you could be inspired by their example. In fact, I want to lay their story in front of you this morning and say that it needs to challenge me and you to not settle for the easier route, which I think far too many do, but do the harder thing and to figure out how I can make a difference. And so I want to work on that for a little while this morning. In fact, I want to make that very memorable, very simple, as is my custom sometimes. I just want to give you some words, five words this morning, okay, that will quantify a little bit how you and I can make a difference. And I hope, because it's just five words, that that'll make them memorable. And maybe when you and I leave today and we get out to doing our business this week, some of these will kind of hang with you. And Jimmy, this story will hang with you and it will be inspirational. And maybe we'll look around and see how we might make a difference too. We're going to work in the letters of Paul this morning. In fact, I'm especially going to be toward the end of several of his letters, because I think there's a lot there about people who were making a difference, or Paul calling people to do that. I think their examples can inspire us as well. So let's think this morning about how we can make a difference. And the first word, as we ponder that, I'd like you to consider with me is the word participate. If you want to make a difference, if we want to make a difference, we need to step up and participate. It makes me think of a little league ball game I watched many, many years ago when my boys were playing. There was this one lady in the stands during this little league game that harassed the umpire the whole game. Have you been to a game like that? You know, little kids playing, you just kind of want to leave over and say, it's a little league baseball, lady. Nobody did that, but But we were all thinking that, right? Because she just rode the guy. Every call that went against her team was a bad call, and she would loudly protest. And it went on and on and on until finally toward the end of the game, the umpire had his fill. She called out one of his boys on a called third strike. She thought it was a terrible call, and she began to protest. And finally, the umpire threw up his hands, and he called time. He turned around and he walked over to the big fence that divides the bleachers where the spectators are from the field. And he looked up at the lady and he held up the clicker in his right hand that he was using to keep the count and the chest protector at the left hand. And he said to her, "Lady, would you like my job?" And for the first time all day, she had nothing to say. I mean, you could have heard a pin drop. Everybody went quiet, waiting to see what was going to happen next. And I think the umpire had a sense that he had created a moment, and so he just let it linger there. I mean, I think for 20 or 30 seconds, they just sat there and stared at each other. And finally, when it was clear they were going to swap roles, he turned around and he went back and he called the rest of the game. And I want you to know, she had no other contributions for the rest of the day. And we were grateful for that. Two groups attend Little League baseball games. You understand this, right? There are the participants. That's the little boys and the umpires and the coaches that are actually involved in playing the game. Participants. And there are spectators, moms and dads and grandmas and grandpas and coaches who actually think they need to scout the Little League team they're going to play the next week. They're sitting in the stands and they're watching the game, participants and spectators. And that's the way it's supposed to be with Little League baseball. It's not the way it's supposed to be with churches. We don't have spectators and participants. Jesus calls all of us to be participants in this thing that we do together. There are no spectators in the church, brothers and sisters. In fact, when we start reading the closing remarks of Paul in so many of his letters, he urges us to participate. I think about Galatians 6 and verse 10. While we have opportunity, remember this? While we have opportunity, do good. And in Titus 3 and verse 14, our people must learn to devote themselves to doing what is good in order to provide for urgent needs and not to live unproductive lives. There is, Paul says, work that we need to do. Think about our theme text in Titus and how many times there we're called to be zealous for good deeds and careful to do good deeds, and on he goes. In fact, the truth is, everything I'm going to say from here out on this morning, it fits under that umbrella. It's about participating. It's about finding my place on the field, my position, and getting out there doing my thing. In fact, brothers and sisters, I think that's when churches thrive. I think it's the key to it. It's more and more of the people who make up the group figuring out what their position is on the field and getting into the game and doing their thing. And the more that happens, the more that people participate, the more churches begin to thrive. Now work that backwards with me. Because when churches die is when they start looking like Little League baseball games. You got a few people out there in the game, and most people sitting in the stands watching. In fact, it's worse than that. Because sometimes some of the folks sitting in the stands are just like that mom at that Little League game. And they're criticizing the people who are on the field. And so much so that some of the people on the field, they start to feel like that umpire. Why am I even trying? And they get out of the game and they go sit in the stands too. And I tell you, when that process takes over in the church, you know what happens then? You're not thriving, you're declining, and you die. So what's the point? I want to make a difference. I need to be part of that flow. Out of the bleachers, onto the field, finding my place, doing my thing. I need to figure out what I could do for the Lord, and I need to participate. So I hope all week that work will kind of hang around with you. Will you think about where your spot is on the field and how you can participate? So let's quantify that a little bit. Let's go a little deeper. I'm going to give you a second word. I'm going to give you the word praise. And one of the reasons I'm including this morning is because I find Paul doing this all the time. Paul seemed to be really adept at seeing other good things people were doing and saying something about it and writing about it. It's in his letters. Think about the book of Philippians. If you look over Philippians chapter 2, in chapter 2 and verse 22, he has noticed Timothy and the great contribution Timothy is making to the kingdom, and he writes about it. He makes a record of Timothy's good work, and he's not done, because go a little further there in chapter 2, and he's thinking about Epaphroditus, and I think Paul was particularly impressed with this guy who nearly died as he's laboring away for the Lord. And so he's thinking about Epaphroditus' contribution, his participation, and he talks about that. But the example that impresses me most is in chapter 4 of Philippians. We're going to come back to this in a minute, but in verses 2 and 3, there are these two women that have kind of had a fuss with each other, and even as he's calling them out for that, he praises their participation in the struggle. They'd been with him in the work. And so watch for it when you read Paul's letters. Watch how many times he has noticed something good that someone is doing, and he takes the time to point it out, to say something about it. I think it is one of the most important ways that we encourage each other. When he wrote to the Thessalonians, he talked about that responsibility. If you're still right there in the middle of those letters, you can flip over to chapter 5. Of 1 Thessalonians. 1 Thessalonians 5, look at verse 11, where he says, therefore, encourage one another and build up one another just as you also are doing. That last phrase is interesting to me. Evidently, they were doing exactly what he wanted to do. And he says, but I feel the need to tell you to keep doing that, perhaps underlining for us how important that is, that we encourage and build up each other. I suggest to you that praise is such a great way to do that. And you know it, and so do I, because you know how you feel when someone commends you for something, don't you? You moms and dads who come in with a whole line of children behind you, someone comes up to you and said, I really appreciate you guys being here all the time and bringing these kids and bringing them to Bible class. I know what a struggle that is. Got to get up before the sun's up on Sunday, get everybody ready, get them fed, get them dressed, and find the lost sock and get them in the car. And all I know, listen, we really appreciate what you young families do. Someone says that to you, how does that make you feel? Or I got your note in the mail last week. I really appreciate it. It's been hard since Mama died, and your note was such an encouragement to me. Or that was such a great class. Man, you showed me some stuff in that text that I had never thought about before. Thank you for sharing that. How does that make you feel when somebody praises or commends some effort you've made for the Lord? I don't know about you folks. That makes me go out and find something else to do. It stirs me up. So, let me ask you a tough question this morning. What tends to come out of your mouth? Am I the kind of person that like Paul sees the good that others do and just feels the need to say something about it? Or am I that guy, and you know he exists, right? That guy who could look at a perfect situation and I am able to find the flaw, the weakness, the thing that wasn't just right, and oh, if it's there, someone's got to say something, right? Are you that guy? Which one? I was listening to Brent Hunter preach several years ago. He's talking to married couples about criticism, and he challenged those of us who were in the crowd to take a criticism fast in their marriage. 24 hours without any criticism. And I thought, well, that's easy. I married the perfect wife. She'll give me anything to fuss about. 24 hours, don't say anything negative. I can do that. So I decided I would take the challenge, the no criticism fast. Now, here's the key. He says, if you mess up within the 24 hours, you got to start over again. I'm thinking, no problem. But what you did have to do is pay attention to what came out of your mouth. Oh, my goodness. I had no idea. I mean, I would say something, and I think, wait, I got to start over. And I got to start over again. And I'm thinking, I didn't know I said such negative stuff all the time. And I think that's the problem. Sometimes we get wired that way, brothers and sisters, and we don't even realize we're doing it anymore. And worse yet, we don't realize how discouraging it is to other people. So I wonder, maybe one way I can make a difference is by rewiring myself to see the good, to say something about it. I'm not suggesting there is not ever a time where you got to point out what's wrong. There is. Should be nice if there was some balance to that, wouldn't it? Or if we could see more good than bad. I think churches thrive in an atmosphere of praise. How about we adopt that spirit? Third word I want to give you is the word peace. Maybe you can already see where that is going. Now I want to go to Philippians. Talk about these two ladies that I mentioned a minute ago. Philippians chapter 4. In this letter, Paul speaks directly to these two ladies in verse 2. I urge Euodia and I urge Syntyche to live in harmony in the Lord. Now, I am confident that Jeff does not pronounce those two names the way that I do. But I'm just going to say I pronounce it in the Texas version of that, since he's a Florida boy. Wow, that was really mean, wasn't it? All true, but still mean. Verse 3. Indeed, true companion, I ask you also to help these women who have shared my struggle in the cause of the gospel, together with Clement also and the rest of my fellow workers whose names are in the book of life. I will tell you that these two verses raise more questions for me than they answer. I'm just curious. Maybe there's a little bit of a gossip in me, but I want to know what's going on, don't you? I mean, there's some disharmony here. What was the problem? What created this disharmony between them? And why have they been unable to get this worked out? Why is it necessary for Paul to write to them about it? There's a lot we don't know about that. But I do know that there isn't harmony between them. And these just aren't any two sisters. You noticed in verse 3, he talks about that. We mentioned this earlier. He talks about these women who have shared my struggle in the cause of the gospel. I take away from that these are workers. And there's a problem there. And evidently, whatever this was, had such impact that it needed to be addressed. And so Paul is urging the church family, help them. Help them come together on whatever this is. A couple of takeaways from that. First, just that this is going to happen. Every church, every place. I think some people are sometimes kind of ruffled and troubled when there are difficulties and relationship problems in the church family. And I'm just thinking, you do know that 1 Corinthians is in the Bible, right? This is normal kind of stuff. When you bring together people who are from such different backgrounds and have different personalities and life experiences, there are certainly going to be moments of friction. Notice, even among key workers here, it does, I think, carry the potential of harming the work of God. I think that's why it's so desperately needed to be fixed. In fact, churches just can't thrive where there's this toxic atmosphere of fussing among brothers and sisters. I'll give you a good example of that. I was talking to a friend of mine one Monday. He was an elder, but congregation in another place. And he was telling me about the night he had before. He said after the evening service, immediately when he was done, somebody called him into a meeting, went back to a classroom, and he was needed because there had been an ugly episode that had taken place between two of the sisters. And the truth is, it was just another outburst of what was a long-running war between the two of them. It was just the latest skirmish. And so they went back to try to help, and they stayed there. They stayed there all night. I mean, literally, this meeting went on for 4 or 5 or 6 hours. It was the wee hours of the morning before he was able to leave. Can I tell you what didn't happen that night? He didn't greet any visitors. No time. And he couldn't have any new converts over to his home to connect with them and find out what their needs might be. And he couldn't go out and have dinner with friends and be encouraged and uplifted. In fact, by the time he got up Monday morning, he was down and discouraged and worn out and wondering, why I do this job. You know who he was like? He was like that umpire who was ready to say, I think I'm going to go take a seat in the stands. Churches fill up with that kind of stuff. They can't thrive. And so for me and you, the question is, when I get mad about something, is it worth it? Will you think with me about that? I think that is question number one. When I get upset about something, I need to pause, sleep on it 24 hours and say, is it worth it? Or can I just let this go and forget about it and move on? Keep the peace. Or when somebody brings to me a problem, when somebody comes to me because they're upset about something, can I help bring folks together and make peace? Like what's happening here in Philippians chapter 4, where Paul wants the church to intervene and help these sisters get along. Maybe I can do that. Maybe I can be involved, not in gossiping, but with someone upset saying, hey, okay, let's go talk. Let's get it fixed. You'll find out if they really want peace. What a difference it would make in church families if people would be determined to serve as instruments of God's peace. And so could you take that word and think about that? How could I do that job? Maybe there is a place for me to help make peace. And then number four, I want to give you the word perseverance. I learned a lot about this word during the first year that I was preaching for the Joliet Church years ago. I'm back there, up there working with Carla. Carla was part of our church family up in Chicago. But I tell you something, and Carla will heartily amen what I'm about to say. That first year was a tough year. We had not been there a week, maybe, when one of the members died. And the problem was, it wasn't just another death. It was an extraordinarily tragic death. I had a 30-year-old man who died of AIDS, and this was right at the beginning of the AIDS crisis in this country. And so it was an especially tragic and difficult death for our church family. And then after him, there were others that passed. And then we had been there 3 weeks. I was standing at my back door talking to someone on the phone when these sirens went off. And I didn't know what those were. We don't have tornado sirens here. I guess we just all duck or something. I don't know, but in Joliet, they had these sirens that went off, and I'm standing there watching a storm off in the distance, looking outside, listening to these sirens going off, and the person I'm talking to said, dude, get in the basement. We did have one of those. That was a good thing. And so this huge, huge tornado, for those of you who follow weather, it was an F5 on the Fujita scale, just cut right through the middle of our time. In fact, it destroyed the homes of one of our members. Their 4 children were home alone at that time. By the mercy of God, they survived. Killed 28 people in our time. It was a terrible ordeal. And so we're trying to recover from all of that. This is about 3 or 4 months later as winter is setting in. Ugly, you can amen now, ugly, awful Chicago winter. We had no idea. And it was a Wednesday night, and as the service was concluding, this one guy, one of our leading men, just jumped up at the end of the service and walked up into the pulpit, and this is what he said. He said, "This church is in sin, and my wife and I, we just can't do this anymore. We're leaving." And I'm sitting there right where Heidi and Carla are sitting thinking, what in the world? And so there was you can just kind of imagine the ordeal that followed that. And I went home, you don't know this, Carla, you shouldn't listen to this part. And I went home that night, I looked at Heidi and I said, what have we done? Do you think we could go back to Texas? First 12 months went by, we had baptized one person. I was discouraged. I thought, maybe we messed up. I got to tell you, the people in that church, like Carla, they were not discouraged. They were sick of it. They were tired of the mess. They were ready to do something for the Lord. And so they stuck with it, and they kept laboring, and they lifted our spirit, and we kept working. And I will tell you, by the end of year two, we had baptized 24 people. The church had grown 25%. That little group had begun to thrive. Because those folks, look at the word. They persevered. Made me think about Paul's words toward the end of Galatians. Look over at Galatians 6. Remember this in verse 9, where he says, let us not lose heart in doing good, for in due time we will reap if we do not grow weary. Please don't forget the adversary. The devil would love to take the seasons of trouble through which we pass. How about the COVID season for the last year and a half? The devil would love to take seasons like this and just discourage us and convince us things are not ever going to get better. We're not ever going to turn the corner. He would love to just discourage us and get us to quit. But that's what I have found over the years that I've been doing that. That very often, it's just over the next hill where we find victory. It's just around the next corner. What is needed? Perseverance. I got to keep going, even when it's hard. I need to take this passage to heart. Don't grow weary. Keep doing good. And what the church needs, brothers and sisters, is to be loaded with people determined to do what God wants us to do, come what may. If we got to do COVID all the way to 2025, we're going to keep doing the work of the Lord. So maybe I need to hang on to that. Can I persevere even when we go through some difficult periods? Last word. Hang on to this one this week and think about it. I need to pray. And obviously, that just applies generally as a discipline for all disciples. What I have in mind, brothers and sisters, is that we need to pray for our church family and this work we are doing. We need to pray about that. I mention that in part because it's just found again and again and again in these letters that Paul writes to the Ephesians in chapter 6 and verse 18. He urged them to pray, and he said, pray for me too. And then to the Philippians in that famous passage of Philippians 4 and verse 6, don't worry about anything, but pray. And to the Colossians in chapter 4, as he begins to wrap up that letter, be devoted to it, he said, to the Thessalonians in 1 Thessalonians 5 and verse 17, pray without ceasing. And in 2 Thessalonians chapter 3 and verse 1, wrap me into that. Include me in your prayers. I think we need to do that because it works. You know, sometimes, brothers and sisters, we are discouraged because we cannot see how we will get past the challenges in front of us. Sometimes I don't know what the answer is. Have you been there? How are we going to get past this thing we're dealing with right now? How are we going to get to the other side? Sometimes we don't know, but don't worry about that because He does. When we don't know the answer, when we can't find the solution, that's okay. God knows what it is. I have taken so much comfort from this text in Ephesians chapter 3. Would you look at this, Ephesians 3 in verse 20. There's this great climactic end to the first section of this great letter. Ephesians 3 and verse 20. Listen to what he says. Paul says, "Now to him who is able to do far more abundantly beyond all that we can ask or think, according to the power that works within us, to him be the glory in the church and Jesus Christ to all generations forever and ever. Amen." How about that? Just when you think there aren't any other options, there aren't any answers, that's okay. God knows what it is. And we just need to trust him for that. And we can all do that. Pray for God. Would you pray this every day? For God to bring us the lost people in this city that need to find him. Can you pray that prayer? Because I'm going to tell you what, folks, have you watched the news last week? Houston, Texas needs the gospel. We need to pray for God to bring those people to us and pray every day that we can come together and work together to reach those people who desperately need it. And pray for our shepherds. Pray for them every day that God will give them strength and comfort and guidance as they try to help us and lead us navigate the difficult waters through which we're passing as a culture right now. What a difference it would make if from this place God just heard the voices of this family over and over and over again. Have you thought about that? That just praying will make a difference. Those are my five words. Will you take those home with you? And find a way to get in the game? Jim and Edith did. They were still there 30 minutes early. On my last Sunday working with that church family, they were there at the door. And even as the years went by and their health began to deteriorate, sometimes they had to be propped up with something back there, but they were there. They weren't there today. We lost Jim and Edith a few years ago, and they're with the Lord. But during their time, hear me, during their time, they chose the harder path so that they could make a difference. And I hope that'll be our choice too. Maybe it begins for you and me today with the decision about the Lord. Maybe someone needs to decide to come back to him, or someone needs to decide to follow him for the first time. Maybe that's the decision you need to make today. More than anything, this church family is with the Lord and wanting to help you with that. And so if we can, you can let your need be known by making your way down to the front. Come right now while we stand, while we sing to you.